I always get the first wave.
Pretty much, it brought me to tears, like the wave was so good.
That's the biggest drop I've ever taken in my life.
And so right there, I told myself I needed to just relax and stay calm, that I'm stronger than this.
Well, Mikey O'Shaughnessy, Aka, Mikey Red, good to see you, my man. I mean, what a heavy situation the other week, and what a month after the jaws wipeout, and obviously the Valentine's, the Pipeline Day. I want to dive into that deeper, but first off, just give us a rundown on how you're feeling, how your health's going, and how everything's moving on from that day.
Right on, Jamie. So thankful to be alive and just gratitude to the fullest for all my guardian angels, for all my rescuers, and all the choices and everything that kind of helped me stay alive. There were so many different factors that I got really blessed and lucky with to be here right now. So yeah, life is a trip and just taking it day by day, moment by moment as it comes, and just focusing on the healing. I'm not really leaving the house right now. I'm just literally staying in the living room. Curtains are down and just trying to stay sedated, a lot of THC, and just rest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good, man. It's super, super stoked to hear. And like I said, we'll dive into that whole situation a little bit later, but you know, you've definitely been one of the underground charges for a long time, and I know you're from the Big Island, so I'd like to go back and start from there. You know, what was it like, you know, growing up on the Big Island, and sort of just, you know, just transition into that.
Yeah, right on. The underground is a hard place to get out of, but yeah, the Big Island, the foundation over there, that's where I was born and raised, and growing up on the Big Island as a kid, it was living the dream, you know. I grew up on the coastline of Puna, paddling outrigger canoe really competitively. And yeah, that's my foundation. So when I wasn't surfing or the waves weren't good, I was in the canoe, either racing or practicing. And my brothers, my parents, all my best friends, the whole community is at the canoe halau. So yes, it's wouldn't change it for anything. It's small towns over there. The surf isn't like incredible. We don't have any world renowned waves, but there is a lot of fun, user friendly waves. And then we got all kind of slabs and heavy stuff like that. But yeah, not everybody's all into that game. So just trying to like surround myself with my brothers and my heroes and the guys that are really paving the way to lead me into this whole lifestyle.
Yeah. One thing I get from all the guys that I know from the Big Island is that, you know, like you said, it's not like the North Shore or maybe even like Kauai or Maui, where there's just a ton of accessible waves, and it seems like you guys have to be really resourceful. And you know, as a kid, it must be awesome, because it seems like, you know, whether it's spearfishing or fishing or hunting or just exploring it, you know, the coastline of the Big Island is so just rugged and raw. And like you said, you know, it's such a small town. I'm guessing that even like maybe the other big sports like football and baseball maybe don't come into it as much, you know, so you guys are just sort of growing up like, just like I said, like just hunting and fishing and just you know, making mischief around the beach and the mountains, you know. Would that be correct in sort of saying that?
Yep, keikio kaina, children of the land. A lot of the kids and people I grew up with, they're not all surfers. Like, not everybody is ocean orientated, even a lot of Hawaiian people. So like you said, fishing, hunting, canoe paddling, all these other things, like instead of normal sports like football and baseball. But that being said, we got all those too. Just, you know, the small town and the small communities, it's hard to get out of sometimes. Yeah, it's like island fever. You got everything right there. And you're comfortable and it's beautiful. There's always challenges and the community is second to none. So it's all family and people who really care about each other for the most part.
And growing up as over there as a kid, you know, like what age did you start to surf? And I know you got a bunch of brothers, like, you know, were you following in their footsteps? Were they surfers? Were you sort of like chasing after them, or how did you get into surfing?
Yeah. So my oldest brother, Dallas, he's my ultimate hero and he led me to be who I am right now. So, without him, I wouldn't be living on the North Shore. I would probably be on the Big Island, still figuring it out. I was kind of hard-headed growing up in school, like wasn't the favorable in class and the scholar. So just kind of follow my heart and do what I believe is right. So thank God the ocean and the community had my back. So my brothers and of course, like, his name is Dallas, and he grew up with Ikaika Kalama and Keali Mamala. So, like, we had a crew for sure that motivated and had each other's backs, and that's what it's all about, is teamwork. As you know, like, it's not really, big wave surfing is a solo, selfish sport, but for the most part, you're never alone, so... Thank God for those guys that paved the way for me and just led me into this arena.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd written some name downs of, people, like guys from the Big Island that I remembered. And, you know, Kaika was at the top of my list because he's such a phenomenal waterman. Obviously, the Kalama name, the heritage of that name, and, you know, Uncle Boogie, and then, you know, Dave, and it goes on and on. And obviously Kealii and, Aaron Golds from the Big Island, obviously, Shane Dorian and Tori Meister, you know, there's a ton of really good, amazing surfers and watermen. And, and to hear you say that you grew up canoe paddling, because, you know, I know a lot of people in Hawaii, obviously, but I think a lot of the surfers and people that sort of come to Hawaii don't really understand that canoe paddling is the Hawaiian state sport. You know, it's a massive sport, and, you know, through school and everything, you know, and I've been to some of those regattas, you know, I paddled in a couple of those state regattas where they go down to the Kihi Lagoon and just race all day up and down. And then, you know, long distance season culminating obviously in Molokai. And I know recently that, you know, the Big Island had a Red Bull sponsored team over there that was Hammers, man. They were like one of the best teams in the world, you know. And so I was really stoked to, you know, hear that you grew up, you know, canoe paddling as well, because it's such a good foundation, because you learn to work as a team. You know, you got to blend together and you can't let people down. You got to turn up for practice. It's a really good way to start.
Build your community, yeah? Yeah. You as yourself. Excuse me, sorry, but yeah, you're one of the most legendary paddlers, so to be around you and learn from you is huge for me too. You've always inspired me and motivated me, but yeah, like you said, year round, regatta, then one man season, then six man long distance. So to have that as my foundation, you know, being a steersman, I feel really lucky to have that guiding me in the surf world.
Yeah. So when was it, Mikey, that you, everyone loves surfing, you like growing up, you know, it's just something that you do because everyone's doing it. But, you know, was there a moment that you were like, hey, you know, like, I'm sort of pretty good at surfing, or, you know, you saw someone that was like, maybe like a Shano that was like on the tour, and you're like, was there a moment when you thought, like, dream, like, wow, maybe I want to do this, or maybe this is something I want to, like, you know, do? Or when did that sort of start to enter your mind?
Yeah, pretty much ever since I can remember, that's all I wanted to do, was be a professional surfer and surf big waves. Growing up under my brother's reins Ikaika, Kealii, Kainoa Haonio. These guys have given me their dream in a way. And yeah, ever since I can remember, I've always wanted to live on the North Shore, surf Pipeline, and be invited to the Eddie Aikau. Like, every kid growing up in Hawaii that surfs, pretty sure we all have the same dream. And it depends on the individual. A lot of others, like, have different circumstances, and they get there a little easier. But for myself, I've just never given up my personal goals, my personal legend. And yeah, just so grateful for this life, because it's a healthy, beautiful life. It's living the dream. We're living the dream, getting to surf every day. And yeah, just, it's tough out there for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say too, like, coming from the Big Island, there must be the challenges in itself. And I think that yeah, anyone that knows, but just maybe elaborate on what are the challenges, like, coming from, you know, an outer island like the Big Island and having to, like, you know, try and make it, you know, to where you can potentially make a living or chase those dreams.
Yeah, coming from the Big Island, the odds are pretty much same as you coming from Australia. You know, same as others coming from around the world. I'm not a local in this pecking order. So growing up in Hawaii definitely have certain advantages. But being raised around, like, Hawaiian communities, it's all about respect. You give and then you get. So, yeah, just so thankful for all that values instilled in my life. And, yeah, just trying to. Now I live here for half my life, since I was 16, and it's been life changing. I'm literally living the dream, like I said. So it's a struggle. I'm having hard times, just like everybody else in the world, but trying to stay positive and just listen to my heart.
Yeah, and so you mentioned 16. So I'm guessing that was you finished high school on the Big Island and then decided to go to the North Shore, or how did that work out?
Yeah, so like I said, I was kind of a hard-headed kid growing up, really kolohe, and learned the hard way, basically. So school wasn't my forte. Once I kind of got the gist of reading, writing, basic math, I kind of just was like fixated my sights on the North Shore. So I dropped out of high school, moved to the North Shore at 16, and just got, like, basically the worst jobs that you can get, dishwashing, just any job really to, you know, pursue my dream out in the ocean, Pipeline, Jaws, Chopo. So yeah, just trying to take it step by step and take notes along the ways. And yeah, with my own formula and my own plan, just trying to get the best waves out there.
And how was that? You know, because there's a lot of people that, you know, do come to Hawaii, you know, whether it's from around the world or, you know, from, you know, outer islands. They, you know, obviously the North Shore is the Mecca. So how did you go about trying to, you know, work yourself up in that pecking order and to getting waves at certain spots? And, you know, how did you go about that?
Yeah, so it started, like, when I was 14, you know, just kind of learning from the best. Ikaika, Kelly, my brother. So they had, like, you know, skills that are second to none. So when I was over here, or when I made the transition, I had a lot of help for sure. But like a lot of other people coming here with not much financial help or stability. So just trying to balance a regular life on top of trying to, you know, get into that pecking order and get the waves that I visualize. It's been so hard. Like, it's dog eat dog out here.
It's crazy.
Nobody really wants to share. Nobody wants to give you their secrets. So you're out there trying to figure it out for the most part. Coming from the Big Island, we don't got no Pipeline. We don't got no Jaws. So coming here to the North Shore and, you know, the big crowd, the pecking order, like, I didn't get shit for the first 10 years, you know, 5 years at least till, like, getting recognized. Oh, this guy's actually from Hawaii. So, yeah, just trying to do it politely, respectfully, and at the same time, not really caring who's, like, out there at the same time.
Yeah, you know? It's a fine line, right? Because you, like, you know, a lot of the people I've had on the podcast obviously have, you know, have sponsors or, you know, are able to pick windows to go. So, you know, because pipeline's such a, it's, you know, like, it's that, you know, what they say, the 50-yard line, it's the beach, and you got all the best guys that converge and, you know, they'll be at the houses and it's, you know, it's big, but it's not that good. Then the wind switches and it's on, you know, and then someone will go out and maybe get an insane wave and that just kickstarts their career. But if you don't have that, like if you're not able to hang at the houses or you're working a job and you're trying to pick your windows around when you think the swell is going to be its best, then that's generally when the whole world's out there as well, right? So it's sort of, it's really good to speak to someone that, you know, is hasn't had it all given to him or and has had to really work for what you've got. And not saying that other people haven't, but like you mentioned, you know, just everyone has their different journeys in life, you know, and your journey is different than everyone else's. And it's a cool journey. And it's good to see that you haven't given up. You're still not giving up. You've had lots of successes along the way, but it's really cool to hear that, you know, like just putting in that time and effort and not being deterred by going out and sitting there for 3 hours and getting absolutely zero and then having the mental fortitude to go, I'm going to go do that again and again and again and get nothing and get nothing. And then, you know, it's a tough gig.
Heck yeah, it's life and death out there. So you don't want to make any mistakes. Equipment, positioning, timing, as you know, like it's life and death. So for me, like just trying to make all my decisions like calculated where I'm like all in. I'm, you know, I'm confident in my choice. Yeah, but like you said, that takes time. So just trying to put in the time and yeah, I've been over here for 12 years now and still living the dream.
And then what's, you know, when was it from, because like, you know, you can distinguish big waves to big waves, right? Like, you know, pipes, a big wave, like sunset's a big wave. And then you've got Outer Reefs, Waimea, you know, when did you, you know, you've moved to the North Shore, obviously I'm guessing the focus was on pipe, right? It usually is from anyone trying to make a name for himself. Now, did you also at that stage, when you move over, you're like, okay, like I'm going to focus on pipe, but I'm also going to paddle out the Waimea. I want to start to get to that next level, big waves as well. Like, what was that like?
Yeah. So I didn't really know about all these other waves, but for sure I was fixated on pipeline and Waimea. I like every decision, every move I make is, you know, around these waves. So all the other ones are a bonus, but the same day pipeline is good, generally Waimea is not going to be good. So like, you know, it was just a bonus. And yeah, I think I've always had the same goals and appetite for surf and big wave surfing. I was lucky, like with my brothers and Ikaika and Kili, like to be around the jet ski evolution. And when I was a young teenager, I was learning all that stuff, how to drive and tow with the best. So once I moved over here, 16, like it was game on. I just had to jump through the hoops of, you know, balancing a regular life with a, you know, regular job and all that. But yeah, the North Shore is like the Mecca. If you want to make a name for yourself or, you know, surf pipeline, you got to be over here. So yeah, just going home or like being over here, I have to be over here the whole season. It's too hard to go back and forth. So with the resting part of things and then just trying to score every swell in the right timing and be a standout, that's my goals.
Yeah. And when did you, I know you like going to Tahiti, and so when did you start to travel, like to chase swells as well? You know, was that, you know, you moved there when you're 16, obviously you got to try and earn some money, save some money. And with limited help, because I'm guessing at that time you probably didn't have any sponsors, right, to really help at that stage. So when were you able to start to maybe like branch out from just staying in Hawaii and going to some other places?
Yeah, just trying to work as hard as I can, save money. And then Tahiti was always like a dream destination, just like the North Shore was. But I felt like for my appetite, like I've always been attracted to three waves. And the first wave, Pipeline, second wave, Jaws, and the third wave, Chopo. So it's been a lifelong journey for me to get there and to those like dream destinations. But yeah, my brothers have gone to Tahiti back in the day, and they made a name for themselves and kind of just like told me how awesome it was. So I've always just been fixated on big barrels. That's kind of like what drives me. That's what I train for. That's what I sacrifice. And yeah, so
yeah,
Tahiti was like huge.
Yeah, yeah. Because you won the, I mean, I'd have to imagine that the wave of the winter was probably the most important moment in your surfing career up until that time. What was that, if I'm remembering correctly, 2016 or?
Yeah.
2016, an incredible wave at Backdoor, which got
off the wall.
Off the wall. So it got you wave of the winter and 25 grand.
Yep. So that was the most money I ever had. At the time, for sure, it was like life changing. Zero to hero. So having some money, being able to make moves, I saved that money. I bought surfboards, plane tickets, paid rent, and bought nutrition. So I invested it all back into Mikey Red. Yeah, it's so thankful for Surfline and that platform, and being able to win that was like a dream come true. And it was a lot of work, blood, sweat, and tears sacrificed into that special wave. So yeah, just some, that definitely was the life-changing career moment for me. All of a sudden I had a profile. So yeah, that's kind of like being here on the North Shore. That's what I work towards, like not always invited to the contest or, you know, it's a struggle. So to win that was like, it was so refreshing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like you just, you know, that we were talking about before, like that, all those times of going out and not getting waves and just trying and never giving up. And then all of a sudden getting that wave. And we've seen it before with many people, like one wave just starts a career at Pipe, off the wall, back door. You know, it's incredible how one wave can really just kickstart someone's career. But it seemed like for you after that kickstarted into the crazy thing is that 25 grand 20 grand it seems
nothing,
like such a lot of money, but it's not,
it goes
like when you've got to travel and you've got to try and reinvest in yourself, you know, it really
pay rent,
yeah,
buy food, put gas,
yeah,
like,
it's
there's a lot of things that come, you know, first, yeah, before the whole surfing fun work part.
And then you got picked up by Volcom, right? So that was a sort of a transition from, it seemed like Volcom did a really cool thing. They went and picked up a bunch of local guys. I think it was you, Mikey Bruno, Kalani Chapman, right? They supported a bunch of the local guys and got you guys. And what year was that? Was that like 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah, that was 2017. I got on the Volcom team and family. That was a huge opportunity and still is a huge opportunity, which I'm beyond grateful for. The whole, you know, Volcom House, being at Pipeline, they came at us as Pipeline surfers and offered us an opportunity, myself and four others. And it was a no-brainer, right? Like, dream come true. So I just, with this opportunity, I just, like, you know, I'm still in my 20s. So I'm really, like, it just really was gas to the flame to work hard and be out there to try and make even more of a name for myself and be on the best waves out at Pipeline. And, you know, just get straight to work.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've seen it, Mikey, you know, like, I've seen you invest. I mean, you know, you've been working really hard with Kahaya Hart, you know, training. You know, I train with you guys there sometimes, and I've seen you putting in the hard work. And I think it's a really a good thing for any kids listening is that, you know, if you really want something bad enough, you know, it's you've just got to dedicate and focus and train and just not give up that ultimate dream or goal, whether or not you achieve it or not, you know, to have something that you're so, you know, like the Eddy, I think, like you said, all the kids growing up in Hawaii, like for me, the Eddy was a dream. And I was in this tiny little town in Australia, you know, but I watched the Eddy video and knew about Hawaii and was like, I want to be in the Eddy. And like, it was just so ridiculously far from like reality. Like, my friends just looked at me like I was an alien. You know what I mean? They're like, you're an idiot, mate. Like, as if you're going to be in the Eddy, you know what I mean? And it was just, but you dream. I'm a dreamer. Like, deep down, I'm just a big dreamer. Whether or not they become reality, I feel like dreaming and having massive goals, there's nothing wrong with that, you know? And because whether or not you get it or not, it allows you to focus and train and hone in on something. And that's a good thing in life, is to have something to really work for.
Yeah, for sure. So thankful for this life I was given and the dream. Yeah, not giving up. And it definitely depends on the individual. And if you love it or not, you're going to follow it.
Yeah. I mean, you've been around so long. Like, you're only 20. Did you say you're 28?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, God, man, you got so, you know, hopefully cross our fingers, you know, that pandemic and all that bullshit and the Eddy will come back and you got so many more years to work yourself into that event, you know. And, you know, as growing up in Hawaii, I can imagine that would just be the ultimate dream and goal, is to get on that list, you know.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, I look up to you. You're as bad as they come. You're one of the best. So, you know, to be around you and learn from you, guys like you, is pretty, I feel pretty lucky and fortunate. And of course, Eddie Aikau and the family legacy. And yeah, I hope I can live up to the hype and yeah, get in there and make a difference. And yeah, ideally win.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man. Talk about life changing, winning the Eddy. Talk about life changing. That would be incredible. So
let's
go, man. And then
or Jaws.
What, like, Jaws? Yeah, I was about to say Jaws. When did because I know it's, you know, I started to see you make your way to Jaws, start to be over there on the best swell. So when did that become a focus for you as well?
Yeah, so Jaws has been, like, you know, constantly inspiring me my whole life. When I was a kid, as a young teenager, even 11 years old, like, all I wanted to do was tow into Jaws, like, be out there, you know. My idol, Ikai Kakalama and Garrett McNamara, they're the best team. Uncle Boogie on the cliff, like, Garrett got the wave, you know. Freaking, it's a teamwork thing. So I was always attracted to Jaws ever since I can remember. Like I said, those three waves have inspired me and dictated all my moves. So yeah, like, you know, just trying to balance the life and here on the North Shore with all these epic waves, but sometimes you gotta, like, forget about these epic waves and go to the big mama.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where, you know, like, Pipeline, Jaws, one wave can change your life. And that's kind of the person I am.
Yeah.
Looking for those life-changing waves.
Life-changing waves, yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about Jaws. Let's talk about that this year you went out, it was the swell, I think it was the swell that the outer reefs were firing here. And yeah, take us through. I think, I mean, Surfline already did a little piece on you talking about that five wave beatdown, but for people that haven't seen that, let's have a little chat. Hey there, let's talk about that whole from takeoff to by the time you got picked up.
Yeah, freaking, it was no walk in the park, let me tell you that. Just to, like, you know, wax your board and, as you know, to paddle out into the lineup, you're risking everything. So, yeah, just some. The day before was colossal. Everybody is towing in and getting those huge waves. And, you know, on the North Shore, John guys are paddling into Himalayas and getting those huge barrels, Kaivi Berry. That was super inspiring. But, yeah, just some being a part of that huge Saturday was like, it was overwhelming. Yeah, there were so many big waves and, yeah, not really having everything organized like a jet ski and a driver and just basically being on a boat, but also like hitchhiking. So kind of just trying to wait my turn and stay calm at the same time, but ended up getting some sick waves some Saturday thanks to Daniel and Kelly. That was a life-changing day, like just to be a part of that and watch all the historic waves and rides go down. That was really motivating and inspiring. But come to Sunday when I caught one wave in the paddle session and didn't even make it halfway down and just ended up face planting and kind of knocked out on impact. And so that made everything kind of somewhat a little more handleable to endure the whole next five waves on the head.
What was that, Mikey? You said that you actually feel like you blacked out or got knocked out on the impact when you fell?
Yeah, 100%. Wow. On impact, I knocked out. And then within like 5 moments or so, kind of getting sucked up in the lip, then started coming to, kind of gathering my senses back. And then, yeah, just getting throttled by that one. And somehow being knocked out made it a little more easy and not so like scary.
Because I've had that happen as well. You're sort of out of it. So you're nearly more relaxed. You're not freaking out as much. And it's obviously you don't want to be knocked out, but sometimes the world works in wonderful ways and weird ways that it maybe helped a little bit.
Yes. Cause there was so much energy still from the day prior. The swell was so strong still. It dropped in a lot of the size dropped a lot from the day before, but still with a lot of those waves, it had that energy. So when I fell, it was super gnarly. And, ended up coming to kind of like during the pounding of underwater, I didn't get a chance to pull my life jacket as it was like so violent. And, I was just trying to really stay calm and endure what was coming next, because you never know, yeah? So once I popped up and surfaced from that first wave or the wipeout, then the second wave was like right there, and I had no time to even prepare, just wore it on the head basically and got throttled by that one and ended up getting to pull my vest and finally inflated and helped my nerves relax and calm down a lot. And then ended up taking 3 more. So, yeah, I was 3 more on the head. I was physically exerted. I'd never really felt that
drained,
tired or drained before ever without, like, you know, getting knocked out or unconscious after. So I ended up, like, fumbling the jet ski and the rescue with my board, the 10-foot board and the turbulence, just, like, not really being all there. So I ended up missing 2 rescues, and then thank God, like right before I ended up getting smashed on the rocks, Curtis and I linked up where, you know, he rescued me and got me to safety because it wasn't looking good where the area I was headed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he brought me back to the boat where I had all my stuff. And, that's when it was just like reality was sinking in. And I was like, tunnel vision was starting to happen. And I felt like I was just, all I wanted to do was close my eyes and go to sleep. So that was kind of a scary feeling. I don't know if you guys have head injuries before, but yeah. So when I felt super tired and all I wanted to do was sleep, I knew that was a bad idea. So I tried to organize some things and take off my wetsuit to where I was like, you know, relax and stop hyperventilating and getting exhausted from all that heat and breathing. So, yeah, I got to the boat and things kind of turned around there when I ended up hydrating and getting a lot of magnesium and vitality back into life.
Yeah.
Thing, so.
Yeah, man, it's no game, the old Jaws. It's God, man, it's such a heavy wave. It's
had a bunch of the worst wipeouts, so, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, it's not if, it's when. You know, if you play the game out there and you're looking to get a good wave or a big one, it's eventually you're going to get caught, or you're going to, you know, make a mistake or pick the wrong wave or whatever it may be. It's just, it's inevitable. And,
it's inevitable,
but it's how you deal with it, you know, and it's how the preparation, like you say, it's the training and, are you hydrated before the day and all that stuff. If you did you get a good night's sleep, you know, all that stuff can, like if it's that just what you said then sounded like when you're listening to like a UFC, you know, like I love watching the UFC countdown shows and all the after interviews and you see the guys that have cut too much weight and they've dehydrated themselves so much and they get clipped and it mightn't be by a big shot or anything, but but their brain has no fluid on it and they just lights out. You know, they're able to get knocked out a lot easier because they're dehydrated themselves, you know. And I feel like as surfers and stuff, we do that all the time. You know, it's obviously nowhere near as bad as losing 30 pounds in 3 days. But you know, if you've been surfing, say, you know, those days where you've been surfing, it's been pumping on the North Shore for a week and you've just surfed pipe the night before and you jump on a flight and go over and not a good night's sleep, jump in the boat, you know what I mean? Like that's a recipe for, you know, to be not at your best.
Caught off guard.
Yeah, you know, and you know, and you know, and transitioning into the pipeline wipeout, I guess, you know, it's like what effect did that knockout at Jaws have on, you know, when you hit your head there, you know. So that's a perfect transition. So let's go back to the Valentine's Day swell at pipe, and let's just not sure if you've talked about it yet or but let's just talk us through the day. Let's just start off because it was a pretty big hype swell, and let's just start off on how that day started off for you, and we'll roll through the scenario of what happened.
100%. So yeah, the Valentine's swell pipeline, first thing in the morning, checking the waves, it's going off. So getting everything's all organized, we're ready, you know, just kind of trying to watch the lineup and study which waves you want to catch, where you want to catch them. And that's my normal routine, kind of just looking for what I want to get and where I'm going to get. So ended up having a great first session. Ended up scoring two nice barrels, one left, one right, and a couple other successful rides. So by that time it was lunchtime and I was ready to refuel, and trying to time it with the crowd is always hard. So yeah, just picking the right window. But on these special swells or special days, it's usually good all day. So trying to gauge, you know, how you feel with the crowd and what you received already, trying to also be really thankful and content for the gifts that, you know, we're given. Because like I said, it's life and death. So yeah, always, it's a high stress environment out there. came in, got lunch, probably should have just stayed out there because the window of going in wasn't the right call. Yeah, the waves are firing all the way through, so that was a little head trip, but refueled, got back out there. Just before getting back out there, sitting on the beach with Flynn and Keone Nozaki, a bunch of the boys, Ayala, Kala, just evaluating it. Just before like paddling out, had all my sunscreen, my helmet on, a little onshore kind of came in. There was a little sea breeze and kind of a lot of people started coming in, and it was still barreling. So, you know, just trying to study it and make the right call, but ended up paddling back out there as the little texture was challenging for everybody, but sometimes that's the window. Yeah. So you want to be out there and, you know, do the best you can, but so I don't really have a recollection from, seeing the wave or even like paddling out. I remember being on the beach with the boys and saying goodbye to my girlfriend and just, you know, preparing for battle.
Yeah.
Got out there. It was probably around 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes you wait 4 hours. Sometimes the wave comes in 30 seconds. So just trying to be ready at the right place, the right time, and paddle your ass off. So ended up, I think the wave came. I seen that it was a right, and I love going right. It's but on those big days where it's like, you know, 6 to 12 feet, the rights are pretty treacherous, and a lot of them are all closeouts. And then the, you know, the current and everything, the reef, it's just no man's land. I have a slight memory of falling on the wave, kind of like just seeing a beautiful runway, and I was already swan diving by then, and on impact again, knocked out. So quick flash, getting sucked over the falls. Came to for a second. My last thought I remember having was, oh no, this is not good. And then I have no recollection.
Wow. So, and for most people that have, it's worst case scenario at Pipeline, right? Cause you're in the peak, you're right in the apex, and we see it all the time where guys are too late or whatever, like that famous Andy Irons ones where he's like trying to get out the back and get sucked over with the lip. But you fell, and was it the impact from the reef, do you think, or just the impact of just that hitting the water that flashed you out? Can you remember that? Or
I think a lot had to do with it. A lot of it had to do with my wipeout at Jaws. So I was still coming back from that, and then on impact I hit the water first, and that's what knocked me out again. And then coming over straight down into the reef.
But you came to as you were getting sucked over just for a little bit.
For one thought. And then it was all black, no euphoric moment, no white light, just straight out. And my next kind of memory is just being on the beach, you know, on the stretcher, on the backboard, and all the lifeguards and everybody, all my rescuers, like, surrounding me. So when I woke up, I was straight, like, you know, I didn't know where I was, who I was, why everybody was so freaked out. And just looking at everybody's facial expressions and being held down. They wanted to make sure my spine was okay and put me in a neck brace. But, I think because I was in shock and because the near drowning experience and all the water in my lungs, I felt like I was still drowning. So when everybody was crowding me and kind of like talking to me, it was so much. There was too much going on.
Probably claustrophobic. You felt like you was probably just
drowning. I felt like I was drowning. So I was, all I wanted was space. I couldn't catch my breath. And I was basically just fighting for my life. A lot of lifeguards, Kyle Foyle, Dave Wassel, Jesse, Tamayo, like, yeah, thank God for all of my rescuers and these professionals that risk their life to, you know, put themselves in harm's way to save guys like me. And then, of course, all the other surfers, the first responders that seen me, Joaquin, Leo, Max, like, it's such a brotherhood, our big wave surfing community. So without all these, like, angels and rescuers, like, I probably wouldn't be here.
So let's go back. I want to go from, obviously you can't remember, but I want to, you've probably seen the footage, I imagine, I've watched it back, and you've had people probably tell you what happened. Can you try to the best of your ability, obviously, like once you hit the second time and was knocked out, do you understand the process of events now from that to getting to the beach? Can you go through that for us?
Yeah, so I just from watching the videos and hearing stories, I haven't really like dissected it too much. I just know I made a bad mistake and it's life and death out there. So I'm really like having no recollection is also a blessing.
Yeah.
But thank God for the helmet. Because my head went straight into the reef. My helmet is messed up.
No, you think so?
On this side of my helmet, it's all scratched up. There's a quarter size indention, like where I definitely would have had like a hole in my head. So, and then all the scratches and stitches, staples, whatever would have happened, like would have been much more severe. So, it was second reefing that day. So I think Joaquin was the first responder to really notice that I didn't come up and my board was tombstoning. Again, thank God for the leash and that not, you know, breaking, because then it would have been a whole nother scenario. But Joaquin, I heard he was really like, he didn't stop looking and paying attention to my wipeout and my board. So he knew that I didn't surface and he was the first guy to come in. And then there were several others, but Joaquin, Max Beach, and Leo Friavanti, I think, were the first guys to actually get to my body and hang on to me through the impact zone and all those second reef sets. So, like, maybe, you know, without them holding on to me, my leash would have broke or who knows what would have happened. But those guys holding on to me and ideally, like, trying to get my head above water, so, you know, brain damage doesn't severely kick in. It's all time. So those guys were so fast and so on it. And I've been around a lot of accidents out there. I've been a first responder to Dusty Payne. I watched Kalani catch his wave and I was right there during that whole rescue scenario and not actually being help, just like realizing like the severity of it and then also realizing that what could I do? Like there was already Uncle Terry and Nathan and Seth already fishing them out of the water. So I felt like, you know, me going into that extreme situation would have just almost been more chaotic or more worse. So yeah, just being around there or being around big waves, you see all these, like it just happens time after time. So it's not if, like you said, it's when. By that time, those four guys that got to me first, they ended up taking like a 10, 12 footer on the head and somehow hung on to me through all that turbulence and the impact zone. And then the next wave of surfers, Uncle Mike and Arjuna coming in from second reef. And then also guys coming off the beach, Billy Kemper, Zeke Lau, Cole Rothman, by the grace of God, Billy caught a backwash out from the beach to me, directly to me. So, so thankful. And so thankful to be alive and for all those guys that responded and acted in that life and death situation, because a lot of times when you see that stuff like going on, like you're going to risk your life. And so that being said, you know, you just want to be calculated and hope for the best possible outcome. You're preparing for the worst, but hoping for the best. And, there's so much luck and Mother Nature, like she turns on, she turns off, she she gives and she takes.
So. Yeah. And then, so then you get to the beach and obviously the North Shore lifeguards, you know, take over, they grab you, they probably, you know, make sure your spine, backs, everything's, you know, drag you up the beach, carry up the beach. And then at this stage, you're still out, right? You're unconscious. They start working on you.
Yeah. So I was out, until getting to the beach, I believe, I don't know who it was that gave me chest compressions, maybe Kyle Foyle or Dave, but yeah, from when the jet ski Jesse got to me and, the surfers that were, you know, hung on to me, finally getting fished up onto the jet ski, got beached with those guys and yeah, chest compressions began. And, that's when life came back to me. It literally was, yeah, I've had a lot of like euphoric moments before in the past and being out this time, there was nothing. There was no lights. It was just darkness. And then all of a sudden, like it was reborn and reawakening. Life was just, you know, given back to me. And, those guys, like, because when you knock out underwater or hit the reef, like your body is limp. So you're being ragdolled. And normally when we wipe out, like, you're kind of tense, you know, you don't want your limbs to break off or your bones to break. So your body surfing to your best ability, but being underwater, not tense, being limp, you know, ragdoll mode. That's when the lifeguards and everybody like thought, you know, a first, some instinct is like, you know, protect the spine and the neck. So, yeah, they were trying to put me on the backboard and put my neck into the brace. And I wasn't having none of it. It wasn't like intentional. It was just like, felt like, I'm fighting for my life. I didn't know where I was, who I was and who these people were. Just like, it was a lot. So, yeah, once the life was given back to me, it was pretty, intense. And for sure, like my girlfriend was there and her friends. So, thank God, like for, you know, those rescuers, the guardian angels, but also all the prayers and good vibes. Like there's a lot of people that just started praying and I believe in God heavily, and the higher power, you know, so I offer myself up to God and just like, I'm in deep gratitude and
yeah,
I'm so thankful to be here.
And how long did it take you to sort of, you know, you come back to life, like life's given back to you. And then you, like you said, you felt like you were still drowning and everyone, you know, you just wake up to this, everyone crowding you. And how long did it take you to sort of just get a grip of like, holy shit, like, okay, now I'm starting to sort of understand what's happened. I'm sort of able to like relax a little bit more and just sort of like, yeah, because it must have been a crazy situation.
Yeah, I wasn't able to relax at all for even still right now.
Yeah.
I'm still in a lot of trauma and, you know, from the two TBIs that like really severely messes with you. So, yeah, just some life was given back to me on the beach and all my friends were there and I could see their eyes and their facial expressions and people were shook, you know, and there was a lot of people that were still positive and like giving me, positive like hope, you know, because yeah, freaking so I yeah, leaving the beach, I don't know who I left the beach with. I wasn't able to really walk by myself, but I tried to stand up and thank God Pomai and the boys like really carried me up to the ambulance and I got into the ambulance and I just remember being so thirsty, like like the worst,
wow,
crazy thirst that I've ever, like, yeah, this was so thirsty and all the professionals were telling me, no, don't drink water. No, because secondary drowning can occur. So I didn't really understand that and I wasn't having any of it. So I made my girlfriend give me water and it was literally like the fountain of youth right there. there was so much water in my lungs, so I couldn't really like take a breath and recover. So, got into the ambulance and I was just coughing up salt water and blood and from the pulmonary edema that just, yeah, shook me so hard. But all my friends ended up being there right at the ambulance and it was right there at Eukai and kind of like, they were all just giving me so much hope and encouragement, and that really meant the world to me. Seeing their facial expressions and gave me a lot of hope to, you know, hang in there, because I was out of it, still trying to just, you know, take it day by day, moment by moment. I remember the ambulance doors closing and seeing Landon McNamara's face, and he just gave me so much hope and encouragement. He was so positive, and his spirits were up, and a lot of people's facial expressions are just like, they're shook, you know? So
yeah.
Looking at those facial expressions wasn't really helping me out, but then the people who were staying positive and giving me hope, that meant the world to me.
Yeah. Man, what a story, Mikey, man. God's, you know, it's just the beauty and the beast of pipeline, right? You know, you look at it and go, yeah, it's so crowded. There's so many people, but you know what? Imagine if there was only five guys out, you know, like I'm sure you've gone, you know what I mean? Like lucky that there were so many guys there, so many people there, and so many people that have probably done the, give a shout out to the BRAG, the BWAG course, you know, that all these surfers that have done all this training and understand like how important it is to be that first responder, you know, and as gnarly as pipeline is, it's maybe the best place to get hurt, you know, because the lifeguards are so close and there's so many people in the water and nearly everyone knows what to do, you know, and yeah, right. Heavy shit.
Yeah. So yeah, huge thank you to the BRAG class, and you know, Daniello and Cole and Sion and all the guys that paved the way, because Uncle Brian and all the watermen out there. And to you young guys, and to you guys thinking about, you know, signing up for this whole, you know, lifestyle, let me tell you, it should be a requirement for you to go through life-saving skills classes and to re-up your skills and to learn CPR and just do the basics, you know, the C-spine, and do what you can, because if I see you out there and you don't look confident, or you know, you don't have the skills to be out there, I'm going to tell you straight, get the fuck out of here, because it's not only your life that is in jeopardy, it's guys like me. So yeah, I really take it. I take every precaution seriously. Like, I've been a junior lifeguard since before I was a teenager. My siblings are lifeguards. All my heroes are first responders. My mom, you know, working in the hospital, the ICU. She's a nurse in ICU for 40 years over in Hilo. And yeah, so for me, just having that background, I feel really fortunate, but the learning never ends. And, it's constant. You always want to just surround yourself with people who know what they're doing and have the skills to save your life.
Yeah,
life and death.
Good words, mate. Good words. Well, and so just, you know, in summary, how are you feeling now? You know, what, you know, the doctors say you're going to make a full recovery. What's the recovery process look like for you now?
Yeah. So, taking it day by day. Like I said, I still feel pretty jacked up. My body still feels pretty ragdolled. My spine is like, thank God everything is like, you know, I have all my teeth. I have no broken bones. I have no lacerations. All my limbs are intact. So I'm just so grateful for all these, those rescuers and God and everybody that, you know, said those prayers, because I know how easily life can slip away. So,
life's
a trip.
Your life's a trip. All right, Mikey. Well, I usually finish the podcast with five questions. I know what question two is going to be, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So what's the best big wave in the world?
Oh, for sure. Hands down, Jaws is the best big wave in the world, like Pacific Ocean, warm water, and big, huge pits.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've come across, you know, probably all the world's best big wave surfers will tell you the same thing.
Yeah. What's the heaviest big wave in the world? Scariest.
I mean, scariest, heaviest, most death-defying wave is obviously pipeline. The most deaths have occurred out there. The most 100%. Severe deaths. And so, yeah, just
I think that's 100%. Yeah, I think that pipeline. Was, yeah. Most underrated big wave in the world?
Oh, there's so many of those underrated big waves. Anywhere really not on the North Shore is kind of an underrated big wave because, like, literally the North Shore is the only place where the conditions get that good in that amount of time. You know, 8 months out of the year, the waves are going off. So, yeah, anywhere, there's a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah, cool. What's one like big wave that you haven't surfed that you would really like to tick off the bucket list?
Oh yeah, there's a handful of those too, but yeah, just growing up in Hawaii, I feel really lucky to have all these, you know, awesome waves in my backyard. But the waves that I really like to experience later on in my life are definitely, there's a lot in Australia and a lot maybe Fiji, or there's a ton of waves that really spark my appetite. Cloud break, ship sterns, the right, just, you know, doing what I can while I'm here, and hopefully if the stars align, maybe one day I'll be lucky enough to get over there.
Yeah, cool. And the last one is where do you think you know, we're always looking for new big waves, but I always ask the guys and girls, like, where do you think the next big wave discovery will be? You know, like how Nazaré just sort of like flash onto the map, like where's the next spot that maybe the next Nazaré you think may be?
Whew, yeah, the world is a beautiful place with so many coastlines and so many different, you know, places that storms open up to. I'm not really like trying to find new waves, so yeah. I'm not really, you know, in that search, but whew, there's probably a ton of waves that are not discovered yet, and yeah, I look forward to maybe being able to surf those too.
Yeah, buddy. Well, Mikey, I think I, you know, vouch for everyone saying that we're so stoked you're still with us. So stoked you're wearing a helmet. I mean, from what it sounds like, I think the helmet probably saved your life for sure. Or, you know, just made it a lot less gnarly than what it would have been, you know, without that helmet. And thank you to all the first responders. Thank you to the North Shore lifeguards. I mean, guardian angels for sure. If you've ever been over here in Hawaii, you know that the red and yellow, they're bad.
Real superheroes.
They're badass. But Mikey, wish you a full recovery, buddy. Can't wait to see you back in the gym, back in the water. And thanks for opening up and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Right on, Jamie. Thank you. It was a pleasure. It was an honor to be on your podcast, and see you in the water.
All right, brother.
Thank you. Right on, everybody. Aloha.